Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Impact Hustle. We appreciate everybody taking the time to you know, listen to us live as well as replay our episodes after the fact. So, you know, as of course, I always say, we're streamed on all the major platforms, you know, whether it's LinkedIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, you know, Apple Music, like anywhere you're going to go listen to a podcast, we're available. So go share it with other people. And hopefully you guys are bringing value. And with that, if you guys have some specific topics that you want us to talk about, reach out.
Lost Eric.
See you, Eric.
That's fine. I will pick up where he left off then. If you have anything specific to add, just send it to us and we can address it at a future time. I took over for you, Eric.
Perfect.
Welcome back.
That's kind of the day that I'm having. It's been a doozy, but we are blessed to have Brent Nowak. Is that how I pronounce your name, Brent?
Nowak.
Yeah, and I've gotten to know you briefly this year. I think it was just a few events, and I'm excited to hear your story and you know where you came from, you know, some of the issues that you've had, you know, and how you've prevailed and overcame adversity. I think it'll be a brilliant opportunity for you to share your story and let others know, you know, that they have a lot of potential and opportunity, you know, waiting for them on the other side of dark times.
I appreciate that, Brandon. I thank you for, you know, having me on and allowing me to share my story. I think it's important to use our voice to let others know that, you know, no matter what their past, no matter the things they went through or, you know, put others through, there's always a light on the other side of the tunnel. And I'm happy to tell you, you know, my experience. Really looking forward. Sure.
So where are you from originally?
I was born in Jackson, Michigan, right outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm the type of person that, you know, very much like my military friends, I kind of moved around a lot when I was a kid. My parents got divorced. I grew up in right outside L.A. Until I was about 10 years old and then moved over to Orlando, Florida, back up to Michigan, both the Dakotas. In my adult life, I've been all over the country, man. So,
yeah. So, and then when did you come to Las Vegas?
So, I have been in Las Vegas for nearly 5 years now. So, September 2020, I was actually released from prison to Las Vegas. So, I adopted this city as my own about 4.5 years ago.
Well, let's get into... what happened, kind of what led you down a dark path and maybe some of the experiences that you had during that time, and just let people know, you know, how dark it got.
Absolutely. You know, it's a long story, starting when I was 15 years old. I was in active addiction for over 2 decades, man. You know, started with normal teenage rebellious stuff, you know, drinking and smoking pot. And it quickly escalated into some pretty heavy substance use and drinking. Over the years, like I said, I moved around a lot. I caught wanderlust real young. And, you know, a part of that was enjoying traveling. But the other part of that was, you know, moving to a new city and crashing and burning everything around me and then packing up a bag and just moving on to the next place. And, so I ended up in Northern Nevada, roughly 2010, 2011, up in Reno. Was my first experience with a treatment center. I was 30, 31 years old, something like that. Did a few months and you know, hit the streets again. I had, you know, like I always do, I put a few things together and then very quickly I burned it all to the ground. And that's really where things got kind of dark for me. The worst of my addiction was up in Reno, Nevada. I was living on the streets up there. I was addicted to methamphetamine and heroin, alcohol and everything else that, you know, was available at the time. And I found myself in, you know, over the years, many different layers of homelessness, right? Like you're crashing on a buddy's couch. That's a layer of homelessness. You're living in a motel. That's another one. You know, you're staying at a shelter, all the way down to you're living on the streets. And that's where my addiction led me, man, was sleeping in an alleyway for about 5 or 6 years.
Wow.
It was pretty bad, man. Found myself in survival mode, but that survival was only to get drugs and alcohol in my system throughout the day. I was not a person I was proud of, man. I caused a lot of destruction over the years, and I took advantage of people, and I was very selfish. Got turned on to a variant of credit card fraud when I was, you know, in my addiction, at the worst of my addiction. And I was a thief, man. I was a thief and I was a liar. And I took a lot from people. And, you know, I didn't care at the time, or if I did, it was buried so deep. And my moral compass was so far off that, you know, all I cared about was just getting high, because I had, you know, I had this physical addiction to these drugs and alcohol, and I had this mental problem where I couldn't get out of the same cycle of behavior every single day, you know. Knowing that what I was doing was not the right thing to do, but pushing those thoughts to the side and just moving on to the next thing that, you know, what I needed to do.
So I have a younger brother that went through the depths of addiction for a while. And as, you know, as a family member, I was at the time, I was so angry at him for making these decisions, you know, not knowing, you know, how, like, I guess how entrenched he was in that cycle. So what was your family aware of how far you had gone? Were they aware that you were homeless, or were they just not in the picture?
You know, they were in the picture as much as I would allow them to be. There was a lot of manipulation and a lot of lying throughout the years, you know, so time and time again, calling them and telling them one thing, but it actually being another. I'm not sure if they knew how dark things got for me, but they knew that I was, you know, completely spun out of my mind, heavy in my addiction and making poor choices. That's for sure. They did know that. I don't think they understood why, you know. I think that's a hard thing to quantify or even verbalize. You know, why are you doing this? Why do you continue on with this insanity? I didn't have an answer back then. You know, I don't really have an answer right now.
Were they in the same city as you, or were they in back in Michigan?
Michigan, California, Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I had a brother out in Tennessee. A family spread out all across the country, but no, here in Nevada. No family, you know, locally.
So were you in a lot of run-ins with the law? Was it, were you constantly getting in trouble?
Oh yeah. You know, they call them now like, quality of life crimes, little things like jaywalking, and, you know, there was a lot of petty theft, a ton of trespassing from the casinos. That was really my life. You know, 24-hour lifestyle, 24-hour towns that we have here in Nevada, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was easy for me to be on meth and up all night or up for days and just kind of run around the casinos because they didn't close, you know, and I'd get kicked out and I'd come back and I'd get trespassed and you go into county jail for, you know, 15, 20, 30 days, whatever the case may be. And, you know, you kind of get a ticket and you're supposed to show up for court and you don't show up for court and you get a warrant and it's just the same cycle.
So,
yeah, I think I was booked into Washoe County Jail 22 times.
Wow.
In a period of 6 years, 7 years, something like that.
So when you would go to jail and you weren't able to get your preferred drug of choice, I'd imagine that'd be pretty tough. Or were you able to get that while you're in jail?
No, it wasn't something that I used when I was in county jail. To be honest with you, that was almost, I hate to say it, but it was almost a welcome break for me. You know, right. I slept indoors. I had food. There was a little bit of structure. You know, I could take a shower and kind of get my mind right for a little bit. And then, you know, as soon as they opened the doors, I didn't know where to go, man. You know, and at the time, I wasn't willing to accept help. And I can't even say now that nobody ever offered. At the time, I just wasn't ready to listen to what people were saying, you know?
Yeah. I would imagine the quality of relationships during that time were probably, you know, not the best.
Again, full on survival mode, right? And you think that you're building these loving relationships with these people on the streets that, you know, you trauma bond with, or you're going through the same thing with.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I know in my experience, I was only looking out for myself. You know, there might've been a little bit of comfort in the misery of the next person. But if I had an opportunity to take from you to get something for myself, I would have. And I think that, you know, that was a two-way street with the people that were out there at the time. You know, I definitely built some connections with people, some true human connections with people during that time in my life. But again, it was just precipitated on the fact that, you know, we were all miserable together, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's nothing that has spilled over into my recovery. I haven't really connected with anybody that I was on the streets with. Again, I was up in Reno at the worst of my addiction. Now I'm here, you know, a whole state away. So I don't run into a lot of people. There is a few people I've been able to reach back out to, and they're doing good as well.
Yes.
It's very much, you know, supportive from afar. Like, congratulations. I'm really proud of what you're doing, and go on and live your life. You know, it's dope to watch when people come out of it, man.
Yeah. What was some of the key factors that that helped you to break that cycle? What helped you to change that mindset in order to free yourself from that misery that you were in?
That's a great question, man. I appreciate you asking it. For me, I can always look back on, you know, the day that I got arrested and actually got charged with some heavy crimes. Right, I was sentenced to roughly 4 years in prison, and that's what I did inside, and I was still doing drugs when I was in prison. It was kind of, you know, at that point I was 37 years old. It was like the essence of who I was I was a drug addict, an alcoholic, and I was miserable, and I didn't know a different life. And so, you know, when the opportunity presented itself in prison, you know, I partook. When I got released from prison, I wanted a fresh start. I was here in Southern Nevada when I was released, and you know, they gave me two options: to be released to back to Reno or to Las Vegas. I'd never been here. My way of thinking was, okay, once again, a new city, let's try this anew, right? I was released to a place called the Samaritan House, and looking back on it now, I always share this, that place saved my life. It was the beginning of my new beginning. So I go there, and it was, you know, not really the height of COVID, but it was September of 2020. So the world was still a little crazy at that time. A lot of things were shut down. And, you know, you couldn't really go out. People couldn't really come in. But at this halfway house, the Samaritan House, they would bring in these 12-step recovery meetings a couple days a week. And that's really where it started for me, dude, is I didn't – let me say this, man. I'm not prison tough. I didn't – you know, I was scared to go back to prison. You know what I mean? I was miserable the whole time. It wasn't a rite of passage for me, you know.
Right.
But I was more terrified of going back to living the way that I was living when I was homeless and on the streets and doing drugs. That's what scared me. So I wanted to do whatever it took. Follow whatever rules that were set on me to get through that time on parole and, you know, in this home. And what was amazing was they gave me the tools and the opportunities to connect with people who were in a similar situation as I had once been and now have since changed their life. And so I kind of followed the path of, you know, a few different men in my life, and they brought me around, and I met more men and women, and that just got bigger and bigger. And I look back on it, man. It's all God. It's all the universe. It just put the right people in my life at the right time. And I, you know, I made the right decisions. You know, let me make mention, I didn't make all the right decisions, right? You know, we all are human, and we all make mistakes along the way. But what I did have that I never had before in my entire life at 41 years old was the willingness to recognize that my actions have consequences, and I have the ability to determine my own outcome in life. And that's really what it was, is I prayed for the opportunity to be put in a position where I could help other people, not knowing what I would get here at Shine LA and Crossroads and Freedom House and all the amazing places I've worked since. But at the time, I really just wanted the opportunity to show people that I meant it this time, you know?
Yeah.
You guys, I was full of shit my whole life. My whole life. You know what I mean? Those foxhole prayers, like, come on, get me out of this situation. I promise you I'll do better. You know, I can't tell you how many times I said that, you know, or calling my father and asking him for money, saying, I promise this will be the last time, or, you know, reaching out to another family member looking for support of some kind. And, you know, it was all manipulation at the time. I didn't mean it. It wasn't what was really in my heart, you know. But when I finally made the decision to live a better life, it was crazy how things started to change for me right away. And I didn't really recognize it then. I do now. I live my life in the rearview mirror going, holy cow, you know, that happened because I did this, or this situation arose because of these choices that I made. Look at the positive steps. Look at the positive things that are happening in my life. And, you know, I'm a staunch supporter of just doing the next right thing, bro. You know, being a better man than you were yesterday. That's the only person you got to beat. And showing up and knowing that we all have the capacity to do anything, have any outcome we want in our life. And I don't care who you are. You never let somebody tell you you can't accomplish something because of your past, man. You know?
Did you have like a defining moment when you were like, that's it, I'm going to change my ways? Or was it something that was gradual over time?
I think it was gradual. I do remember the defining moment of I had a misstep about 8 months after I got out of prison, and I was sober for close to a year there, and I had a relapse, and it was a tough thing for me to deal with. But I'm really glad it happened, because I recognized in that moment, this is not the person that I want to be anymore. So the next morning after I woke up with probably the worst hangover in my life, I think that was a huge defining moment for me. But you know, there was a lot of gradual steps that came to, you know, bring me to this place where in my heart, I absolutely knew I had to change my pattern of behavior. I had to change the people I was around, or I was going to die, dude, you know. And I, you know, it's not even just a physical death, spiritually, emotionally. You know, I was in a black hole for so long, dude. I didn't know how to pull myself out. There's no way I ever wanted that again. You know, I look back on it, and a lot of people will say, you know, I live with no regrets or whatever. I'm not that guy, man. I got regrets.
Yeah.
You know, given the opportunity, I would have made a lot of changes, brother. But I can't do that now. You know what I mean? So I accept the past, and I welcome what comes in the future. The fact of the matter is, I know that it's not going to get easy. I know, you know, the more I stay sober, the harder it gets, you know. The more I want to grow in my personal and professional life, the more difficult challenges come to me, and I have to face sometimes on my own, you know. But I welcome it now to whereas I never had before.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. How long have you been sober now?
A little over 4 years.
That's amazing, man. Congratulations.
Congrats. That's a big deal.
Yeah, I just celebrated May 28th.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah, sorry guys. Like, we've done, this is the like at least the fifth episode of this, and I've had no tech issues, and then all of a sudden today it's like bam, 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 bam.
Yeah. You're in and out. But I figured you'd be back and get it sorted.
Yeah,
out.
So I apologize, guys. Yeah, no, I appreciate you sharing that. Can you share a little more about like what you're working on now? You know, I know we've kind of hinted towards, you know, some of the projects, like when we had Lester on and stuff like that. But talk about, you know, the things that you're working on now, and kind of how people can help support what the initiatives you're working on right now.
Absolutely. I work for two organizations. First is the Shine a Light Foundation. We are a nonprofit that goes into the flood channels every week, and we build a connection with people living underground, offer them basic supplies, and when they decide to accept our help, we have a long-term continuity case management program. So long-term meaning 18 months, where our case managers walk them through every phase of their recovery. Pretty amazing to watch. I started that about 3 years ago, a little less, in a case management role. And as we started growing, the need for community relations was a little bit more prevalent. And I was offered the opportunity to come on as what's known as the engagement liaison, basically just a community guy. I dabble in grant writing, fundraising, and basically just connecting resources to the foundation, connecting people who want to get involved to the foundation, and just being a good steward of what we do. I also work in community relations for Crossroads of Southern Nevada. It is the largest indigent treatment center here in Southern Nevada, across the state, I believe, as well. We're a detox facility. We have 70-something beds for detox. We have transitional housing for over 200 individuals. We'll take underinsured. We'll take uninsured. We help the veteran community, LGBTQ. The list goes on and on. We don't discriminate based on sex, creed, background, anything. They're both amazing organizations in the city. With Shine a Light, what I'm most proud of is our growth and the team that we have, the people that I get to work with. I think you guys can relate to that. You know, when you have an amazing group of people around you, you know, you succeed a lot quicker, and you're much more strong as a team. You know what I mean? And everybody here brings their own unique story. We're all in long-term recovery. We've all been homeless and to jail and to prison and all the terrible stories, man. And so we get to bring our lived experience to the community that we serve. And again, like I said, huge support system within internally here with the foundation. And I think that really, you know, our cup overfloweth when it comes to helping our clients, and they see it. And in turn, I think that ripple effect will spread throughout the city. It's kind of dope, you know.
I would imagine that, you know, you coming from the background that you have and being an inspiration to those that are currently in those cycles of addiction is a major help. Have you seen a lot of success in a lot of people? Because I'd imagine it's pretty heartbreaking, you know, when you think somebody's, you know, getting better and kind of, you know, turning their lives around, and then they wind right back up to where they were.
Yeah, to answer your question, it is heartbreaking. It's difficult to watch some people, knowing full well that everybody has the capacity to change their life. And for me, a guy coming from, you know, literally living in an alleyway and shooting meth with dirty rainwater to who I am today, knowing that if I was in that situation, somebody else could change their life, you know, and everything that's transpired in between that. But, you know, we're a data-driven program, and I can offer you as much data as you ask me for, but the individualized success stories are the best, man. You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So for instance, we're tracking at a 67% retention rating from last year. So meaning,
wow,
roughly 7 out of 10 people that we connect to our program sticks around and they're thriving at this point. Right.
It's awesome.
But knowing that we connected 452 people to services last year, in the 300 people, we're talking 300 human lives or more, right, are still active in our program, are still thriving, and, you know, obtained all their vital documents and been connected to primary care and been through substance use disorder treatment, job development, secured employments, have their children back in their life, you know, are living self-sustained and with dignity, man, with pride. You know, I see a lot of these guys and girls come in here and they got smiles on their faces. And, you know, we got photographs from day one when they come in and they go into detox. And, you know, the change is night and day. And it's a beautiful thing to watch. It really is. What's even cooler, man, is watching these men and women help the next man or woman that come in, you know, and building connections with each other. That's really what it's all about. We say that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety. It's connection. It's human connection. Mm. And it's a wonderful thing to watch these people kind of connect with others and build a tribe and a family of their own, while at the same time elevate their own life, you know?
Well, and the connection part is huge. I'd imagine it's kind of a lonely existence when nobody trusts you, and you know, and you don't even trust your own self.
Or have somebody to lean on. You know, I always spit this when I'm kind of pitching our foundation. Both of you men, including myself, all three of us, and anybody watching right now, we leaned on somebody within the past week to help us through a personal challenge. And, you know, I'll argue that with everybody because it's true, right? Now, imagine if you didn't have somebody that you trusted and that you loved and you knew was going to be able to give you formidable advice to help you through your personal challenge. How dark of a place would you be living in, right? And I think we tend to forget as human beings, that's an essential need, as is food and air and water. We need human connection and love and guidance and support from each other, you know. Take that part out of the equation, and man, it's a sad day, you know.
It is the you know, so I founded a nonprofit in 2012 called the Veterans Connection for vets and first responder mental health and suicide prevention, and my first pillar is connection. Like that's before I start going through any other piece to help them, connections first and foremost of the pillars that we have. It's crucial. And what I like about it is you also get people who have been through the program that are getting involved in helping others, because at the end of the day, like I have the experience on the veteran side, like veterans want to relay and talk to other veterans that are struggling.
Sure.
Just like I'm sure addiction's the same way in your community. Like they don't want to talk to somebody who's never been through it themselves. They want to talk to people who are dealing with it, especially like addiction, because that's, you always have that. Like there's always going to be that drive to go back. And so you need that constant support community around you to ensure that you never go back.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I, you know, we have a large veteran population in our community, unfortunately, that are dealing with homelessness and substance abuse and mental health challenges. And I know, Brandon, you helped me in the past, and, you know, our buddy Lester and our buddy Jimmy Pew Pew, these are guys that, you know, I can
all
lean on.
All three good friends of mine.
Yeah, amazing men, you know, and knowing that there are resources in our community to help these people, you know, when they ask, I think we're blessed to have that, man. We really are. You know, this is, you know, people talk about Vegas, you know, we know it as Sin City and the adult playground, the case may be, but, you know, there's also an amazing recovery and support community here for people that are dealing with a multitude of issues, right? And, you know, I, for one, am proud to be a member of this community who's able to connect others to help, whatever it might be, right? We always say that about Shine a Light. Okay, if we can't do it ourselves, let me get on the phone and find some of our friends and our family that are willing to help out. And one of the things that I love about Vegas, man, is, you know, it is a small town. And there are people out there willing to help, and we can find the connections, you know.
It's amazing. Sorry, Brandon.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, yeah, it's amazing. Like Las Vegas is one of the biggest markets out there, but it really is small. Like I don't live in Las Vegas, I live in Utah, but my network within Vegas is massive, and it's all people that are trying to help each other. You know, I know Lester, I know Jimmy, I know Brandon, I know, like, my connection's massive, and I'm not from that community, and that's because it's a unique community. Like, I think people who are watching this that are just, you know, everyday people, like, yeah, they probably have this in their mind where, oh, it's Sin City, you go, you gamble, you watch these shows, and you, like, that's not Vegas, that's paradise, Nevada, but that's not Vegas. And that doesn't reflect the Vegas community.
Yeah.
And, no, not the local community at all. No, a lot of genuine people out here, man, for sure. You know, and I love that we have the adult playground. You know, I love that this is an international stop for people to come out and, you know, live out their fun adult fantasies, whatever they might be, for a couple of days or weeks or whatever the case may be. But, you know, locally, the genuine article, man, these people out here, I never in my life have I known a better group of people who genuinely don't want anything from you other than for you to succeed. You know, I want to help you get better. I want to see you elevate yourself to the part where when you look in the mirror, you're proud of yourself and you say, I'm ready to go help somebody else now. You know,
yeah.
It's a dope thing to watch. I mean, Brandon, you've been out with us a few times, I believe, you know, for no other reason than you were looking to help the next guy or just be a part of the community. And it's kind of cool to watch, too. You know, what you're involved in your personal life, knowing, you know, good friends with Cody and the Driven Boys out there, and you're getting connected, you know, to that world. Yep. It's just a wonderful thing to see all these beautiful connections being made, you know, that's are based off of, you know, it started with a genuine love for community service, you know?
Absolutely. No, Vegas is unique in that way, in that the genuine connections and the different communities and the overlapping communities, it's like nowhere else I've ever been. It's I've been all over the world, and it is really truly a beautiful thing. Brent, I'm curious, what does the future look like for you?
Great question.
What are your goals?
Great question. Well, so I guess I'll get a little vulnerable. I've been cutting hair my whole life. It's always been a hobby of mine, barbering. And, you know, I would like to piece some more things together in that direction. I mean, one day it's a dream of mine to open up a barbershop / possible cigar bar type thing.
Mm.
In that regard, I am building a little something on the side when it comes to helping the less fortunate with my barbering skills. I'm also working internally with my team here at Shine a Light on building a reentry track for men and women that are getting released from prison. What I'd really like to do is, come on as a full-time advocate nationally for knowing that, reentry services are kind of few and far between, brother. When you're getting out of prison, let's say you're going into a correctional facility, and we're releasing these men and women to whatever program they might have, are we giving them a sufficient amount of time to get acclimated back into the real world? Or are we setting them up for failure? Are we setting them up for success? Are we giving them the opportunity to fail? Are the tools out there so they don't recidivate? And I really want to be, a national voice for what we can do better. And I can only bring my own personal lived experience with that and tell my story and how, the first 2 months really was pivotal for me. And then the next 8 months after that was another portion that was very prevalent in my own success. And I'd like to share my recipe, with the reentry counselors in the prison systems and things like that. But beyond that, man, I just want to help people, want to help people achieve what they're setting out to do, carve out a little piece of happiness in my life, and just have some fun. I'll be 45 next month, and it's time to start living.
So what, as we come closer to the end of this, what advice would you have for two fronts? One, somebody who is dealing with addiction or trying to overcome it. And on the other side, somebody who has struggled, is struggling and is on the streets and wanting to make a change, but hasn't been able to make that full transition. What advice do you have on both sides? Because you kind of come from experience on both ends of those.
No, I get it. I would have to say, it's a really easy answer. You're not alone in this. If you're struggling with addiction and you don't know where to turn, all you have to do is reach out, find a resource, go online. If you can, pull up to, I don't even care. You can stop a random stranger on the street and let them know. Maybe not everybody's going to be receptive, but you can walk into a social services office of some sort and you can say, I'm willing to accept help and I don't know where to start. My phone number is available for anyone. It's public knowledge. You can find me all over the place. You can reach out to me. I want to tell people that are struggling, and maybe you're in the darkest place that you've ever been, and you know today is the worst day of your life. I want you to know that it can get better. I want you to know that you didn't completely burn your life to the ground overnight, so don't expect to put it all back together in a day as well, right?
Yeah. So
here I am 4 years in, and I'm still not a full-on success story, guys. You know, I got a lot of work to do, and I have a lot of destruction to rebuild. But I want people to know that you're not alone in this thing. There are programs out there willing to help. There are people out there willing to connect with you. And if you don't get it the first time, it's okay. Don't be so hard on yourself, you know. For me, you're only a failure if you don't keep trying, you know.
Yep.
When you absolutely positively give up, then you failed, man. But you can fail time and time again and get up and keep moving. For me, I cling very tightly to something that we say around the office: fail forward. Don't be afraid to try, right? Trial and error, fail forward. As long as you don't give up, then you're golden, man. You'll get it eventually.
That really is the key to success, for sure.
It is. Yeah. It is. And, you know, I tell people that every day. Don't be afraid to give it a shot, you know? I'd be more afraid of just sitting around and not trying something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have regrets, and I think my biggest regrets are the things that I didn't do, not the things that I did. You know, and I don't want to live like that. And I want everybody to know, just give it a shot. And, you know, there can be a lot of shame and a lot of, you know, mental health issues that, you know, come into play when you're trying to get out of a situation like that. And it's okay. It's okay. You know?
Yeah, so
for our listeners and viewers of this, and they feel called to support your cause, shine a light or crossroads. Yeah. What are the different ways that they can support? Because I know they can support in time, money. There's a lot of ways that they can, you know, they can help with this cause in helping others. And what are some things they can do?
Yeah, thank you for asking. So obviously, if somebody's in a position to donate fiscally, that, you know, is always a huge need in our foundation. We're privately funded. We don't accept federal, state, or county grants. We don't want the gold handcuffs, right? You know, we want to be able to use the money how we know that it works best. But if you're not in a position to donate fiscally, it's okay. Time, talents, treasures, things like that. You know, my buddy always says, we need resources. We need you to come down and volunteer your time. Every Wednesday, we pack bags for our Saturday outreach. We meet at our office around 4:30. It's a couple hours. We're very informal. You just show up and ask if you can help, and we get you connected. And then our True Blue Saturday outreach, we go out every Saturday morning. We meet at our office at 7:30 a.m. We get all our supplies together, connect you with the team lead, and send you out into the city on our paper routes. And again, very informal. You want to be around, just come around. We also have reoccurring needs for things like batteries and socks and small flashlights and granola bars and bottled water and all of that. But you can best get involved. Easiest for everyone. Check us out on all the social media platforms. We're everywhere. We do have a website, shinealightlv.com. We have an outreach line that you can find on our website. Just give us a call, connect with some of our case managers or myself, and, you know, just be a part of this thing that we do. Our staff, we're not Shine a Light. Everybody in our community is Shine a Light. It's more of a movement than a foundation. You know, it's a way of life and a mindset. You know, I want everyone to know that they're welcome and our door is always open. And most importantly, we need your help.
You know? Yeah.
I love that.
Fantastic.
So before we wrap up, because we are trying to be around 30, 40 minutes, we're not very good at it, but we're trying.
Okay.
What advice do you have for you know, of course, you know, you got involved in helping start Shine the Lion Foundation. Like, what advice do you have for people who are wanting to, like, get out there, either make a difference, start a business, you know, they have some kind of entrepreneur vision, or they want to get involved with a nonprofit, just anything like that. Like, what advice do you have somebody who's trying to figure out what they want to do and how to take the next step?
Sure. You know, if you're passionate about something, connect with other people and learn. Always remain teachable, right? Like, go to the, you know, if you have a passion project you want to start, go to somebody who's doing something similar. Ask how you can get involved, learn. And again, don't be afraid to fail. And please don't think that imposter syndrome is a real thing, because it'll creep up, man, and it'll mess with your head, and you'll start thinking that you're not good enough. But, you know, keep pushing through. If you really care about something in your heart, just get after it, man, you know?
Yep. Fake it till you make it's a real thing, and it works.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, and one other thing I've heard, kind of a theme from you a couple of times, is like, non-perfect action is better than no action. Just move forward, take the action.
And it's something that took me a long time to learn, brother. You know what I mean? You know, constantly overthinking, if I do it this way, am I going to have this outcome? Okay, I'm not going to do that then. And then what? You're still stuck in the same spot that you were when you started overthinking everything. Just get out there and give it a shot. You know, get out there and give it a shot. Don't be afraid to fail, and have the people around you that are able to give you constructive criticism, right? I don't want yes men in my life. I want a good friend who's going to tell me the truth. You know, he's going to tell me the hard truth, or she's going to clown on me for doing something I probably shouldn't have done and teach me how to get better. Make sure that you have the right people around you at all times, man, because, you know, it's true, brother. You show me your five best friends and I'll show you your future.
You know, speaking of best friends, this is totally off subject, but I had this conversation with my founders the other day on my one of my companies, and you know, we were talking about one way to tell, like, who's actually, like, in your corner and who's actually your friend is, like, who will come support you when it's not transactional. Mm. Like, it's really easy for people to rally around you if there's some kind of transactional benefit to them. Nice. But when you just need help, and, like, you know, like, if I went to Brandon, I'm like, bro, man, like, I need a couple of shirts and I'll get you later. I'm sure Brandon would probably like, hey, I understand, like, you're going through something, you know, let me help you out. Like we all go through those stages where there's ups and downs and we just need someone to support us. And it's the people who will rally behind you when you're in your tough spot versus you're only as good as the next dollar. That's who you know who's really around you and who's not.
No doubt. No, I agree with you 100%. Make sure that the people that want to have dinner with you are willing to set the table and do the dishes afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well said.
Thank you so very much, Brent. This is thank you for being vulnerable, sharing your story with others, with the public. I feel like it's incredibly important for people to hear, especially those that are in their, you know, going through their own struggles, and hearing from somebody that has struggled more than most. I mean, it's a difficult position to be in, homeless on the streets. I mean, that's not where people want to be. It's you know, and just hearing that you've come through it and you've come out the other side. I mean, you've gone through hell and you're out of it. And I congratulate you. I congratulate anybody that's been through that. My brother has a similar story with addiction and homelessness, and we're gonna have him on at some point on here as well. And I would love to connect you and him, actually. I know that he's helped. He knows a few people at Shine a Light. They probably know who he is as well, Ryan Mills. But there's, you know, it's fascinating because most families, you know, they have somebody in their family. Maybe it's not immediate family, but maybe it's a nephew or a niece or a cousin or, you know, somebody that's gone through or is going through, you know, or have lost somebody to addiction. And you know, and it really is a nationwide epidemic. that is, you know, that is kind of swept and affects more people than probably people realize. And so, yeah, this is such an important topic, and I thank you once again for sharing.
Yeah, thank you for being vulnerable. Like, there's a lot of people who go through these type of journeys and they're ashamed of it and won't share what they went through. And so hats off on you being not only vulnerable, but you're also taking action to try to help people who are going through similar things that you went through. So hats off to you. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you very much.
Any final words for our viewers there, Brent?
Yeah. You guys, I just want to thank the both of you for giving me the opportunity to share my story. You know, for anybody that's out there that's still struggling, know that, you know, I suffered in silence for many years. You got to speak up, you know, reach out, know that you're not alone in this thing. And, you know, when you do find a pathway to recover, make sure that you can reach back out and help the next person and be as loud as you can about it. Because like you said, you know, this is a nationwide epidemic and some people suffer in silence and they aren't willing to share their story. And I think that, you know, we lose, some really decent humans, because of that. So, you know, say it loud and proud and, you know, find as many of the opportunities as you possibly can to share your story on every platform and use your voice, for positive change. So again, Brandon, Eric, gentlemen, thank you so much for the opportunity today. And, you know, if there's ever anything I can do for you guys, please don't hesitate to reach out. Like I said, we are a community project, so we're here for you just as much as you're here for us, guys.
Absolutely. Right, thank you so much.
See you around, Brent.
Yeah, thank you. we have his information scrolling across the bottom on how to get a hold of him. Please reach out any way you can support and share this podcast around, because there's a lot of people who themselves are suffering. And this, you know, Brent sharing his story could make a difference in their lives. So definitely share this and apologize again for the technical issues that you guys dealt with on my end. I finally had to join from my iPad because I kept getting kicked off my computer. I think it's that stupid Xfinity. I don't know about Comcast sometimes. But anyways, I appreciate everybody. And stay tuned for next week. If you want to be a guest, go to our website, The Impact Hustle, fill out the form. We have had a flood of people wanting to be on our podcast. And so we're going to start booking out several months out. So if you're wanting to be on, I would encourage you to apply sooner than later, because before long, we're going to be booking people into 2026, because the amount of people that have been applying over the last week has been just very heartwarming to myself, and I'm sure to Brandon as well.
I think we got something here, Eric. I think, and like I said, Brent, earlier on, you know, this podcast is just sprouting wings. So we want to give, you know, people a voice that have a message to spread. And we're honored that you used that voice today in sharing your story. So thank you guys. And thank all the viewers and listeners. And we'll see you next week.
Perfect.
Later, guys.
Hang on, guys.